Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. When it comes to technology, teens and young adults always seem to lead the way, while even tech-savvy parents often feel left behind. Question, do these new technologies improve communication or stunt it? And what's the real impact of all those video games, online pornography, and sexting? Dr. Wes Crenshaw is back with a panel of college-bound teens to discuss how technology is shaping the landscape for today's young people. But first up today, why was the Maryville rape case never prosecuted? As KCUR reported last week, a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old high schoolers were arrested early last year in connection with the rape of two minors, 14 and 13. Despite admissions from both boys and despite the fact that then 14-year-old Daisy Coleman was left for hours outside her home in 30-degree weather, vomiting and without shoes, the case against Daisy Coleman's assailants was dropped. The case has been the talk in Maryville, and joining us now are the two KCUR reporters who ran this story down, Monica Sandreski. Monica, welcome.
Yes, thank you, Steve.
And Peggy Lowe is also here. Peggy, good
morning. Good morning, Steve.
Well, just to recap here briefly, guys, two teenage boys were arrested in this case. One spent several months in a juvenile facility as a result. The other boy was arrested, but his case was later dropped. But both boys confessed to authorities. Is that right, Monica?
That's pretty close. I just want to make sure that it's clear that the 17-year-old boy, that he confessed having consensual sex, not to rape.
Okay. And the sheriff said, Peggy, no question a crime was committed here, right?
That's right. Monica and I went up to Maryville. We spent a couple days up there, actually, and we talked to Sheriff Darren White. And when we were questioning him at length about this, he said, in fact, hell yes, a crime occurred that night. Mm-hmm.
Monica, how did you find out about this story? How did you come across it?
Yeah, that's kind of a funny thing, Steve, actually. So my friend actually passed an email along to me. He works with the National Organization for Women and apparently now had tried to reach out to Melinda Coleman, the mom of the victim, just like in relation to joining the organization. And she acknowledged that, but then she responded that there was this alleged attack, difficulty with the sheriff, what their family has been going through, and just really asking for help in following this case.
And that information came to you and off you went on a story.
Yeah, too true. I mean, I brought the information forward to our news director and then he pointed me in the direction of Peggy and yeah, then we've been going at it ever since.
Well, Peggy, how did you go about investigating this whole thing? What documents were you able to review? How did you get going on it?
In a word, we went about it slowly. Mm-hmm. I mean, we went step by step.
That's a good way to go about a story like this.
Well, we took months, really, to, you know, take a look at it because it was just so questionable. You know, on the face of it, it seems crazy. First, these two boys were charged with the crime. Then all of a sudden, boom, it disappears. And so what the heck happened? So we not only questioned the people that we quote in our story, but we went, you know, two and three steps down and interviewed mostly off the record other attorneys, other people in town, other officials.
You know, Monica, you spoke with Nottoway County Prosecutor Robert Rice regarding this case. What were you hoping to get from those conversations with him?
I mean, really, just real short, I was hoping to find out really what everyone else is wondering. Why in the world were these charges dropped?
That's the million-dollar question here, mm-hmm. Right?
Yep, that's right.
Okay. Well, let's listen to a clip from Nottoway County Prosecutor Robert Rice explaining his answer to that question, right?
There was insufficient evidence to proceed with criminal charges against the defendant.
Like physical evidence?
Total evidence, testimonial, physical. There was insufficient evidence to proceed with criminal charges.
Because the guys did admit, that Matthew Barnett did admit to having sex with Daisy that night. But that Daisy...
And I'm not going to respond to that specific fact scenario, but let me just take it as a whole approach. Whenever you're dealing with sexual assault in general, it takes more than that. You have to look at the elements to see what do you have to prove and then what do you have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. And you have to have a person that will testify under oath, subject to cross-examination. You have to say that we had some sort of sexual contact, whatever it is, and I did not give my consent. At the end of the day, if you don't have that basic, simple, but fundamental element, you don't have a case, period. And there's not a darn thing you can do about it. And that's just in general. That's not referring to any specific case in any way whatsoever.
So then what were the missing elements here?
I'm not going to comment on what was missing. And I'm sorry.
You know, Peggy, I still don't get it. I mean, there's still a mystery here. Always in a case like this, maybe in fairness to the prosecutor, you've got to assume there's facts and details that perhaps you're not privy to, and obviously we as readers aren't privy to either. But what's the guess here? Because you certainly had a sense that the victim was willing to testify and the mother was willing to testify. They've gone public with this. So what are you left with? What's your own thinking about why hasn't this case gone forward?
Well, that's the mystery and that's the central question of this whole thing. I mean, I think what Rice doesn't talk about in that cut that Monica gave us is that this girl was very drunk. Even the next morning, hours later, she was nearly twice, you know, the legal
intoxication level.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that plays into this. It is truly a mystery. It is something that still has separated families in Maryville. It's very, very controversial. And there's lots of rumors. We don't print rumors. But, you know, there's a lot of supposition in this case.
Now, here's the other thing, in fairness to the prosecutor, because the county sheriff, Darren White, who said, no question, there was a crime committed here. He's also said he supported the decision not to proceed with the case. So, Monica, how do you square those two ideas?
Well, I mean, he was really clear with why why the case should be dropped. He said that it was the victims and the victims' families that, in his words, harpooned the case, and that he says that Ms. Coleman came to the station every day asking questions and, like, would come in the next day almost as if they'd never talked before asking the same questions. And then she would talk about the case on social media, which he says he begged her to stay off of social media, and he called her uncooperative and hostile. And, I mean, but the prosecuting attorney told me on the record that that had no bearing on it, the social media aspect. So,
man. Peggy, you wonder if treatment of cases like this is becoming something of a trend, because you do allude to that in these stories as well.
Absolutely. You know, we looked at a lot of these high profile cases, and I would also suggest that when we were thinking about actually, you know, publishing this piece, we thought about that. This case looks a lot like Steubenville, Ohio, where two high school football players were convicted of raping this young girl and videotaping it. It also looks like a couple of other cases, one in Canada and one in San Jose, California. And in those two cases, both girls committed suicide. And here, too, of course, we have a case where the young girl tried to commit suicide several times after that happened.
Yeah. You know, I'm wondering, both girls obviously were severely traumatized by this case. I'm wondering how willing were the victims willing to talk about all of this? Because you guys named one of them in your stories. You talked to her mother. You even took their pictures, Monica. How surprised were you by that?
I guess I was somewhat surprised by it, but I mean, like, yes, Daisy, she was very willing to talk about it, and I fairly frank with us and fairly open about it. The other girl didn't talk at all. She wasn't named. Her mother was willing to talk, but also on the, you know, like, stipulation that she not be named either.
You almost wonder if that's something of a trend, too. You know, Peggy, you and I are probably old enough to know 20 years ago, these things were sort of hush-hush. Today, in the social media age, people sort of talk very openly about stuff they never used to talk about before.
That's absolutely right. I mean, remember when the Des Moines Register first published
a rape
victim's name?
And
it was revolutionary.
Was. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they won the Pulitzer for that piece.
Yeah.
You know, I covered Kobe Bryant's rape case in Colorado. The name of the victim was never published in the mainstream media, but certainly it was out there, you know, everywhere else. And now we just have rape victims coming forward. So I do think it's sort of an evolution of these kinds of stories.
Well, Wes Crenshaw joins us now. He'll be visiting with us today during the rest of our show about teens and technology. But I wanted to get his advice, his take on what teen victims can do to help deal with the after effects of something like we're talking about here up in Maryville. And I should point out that Wes is a psychologist in Lawrence. He writes the Double Take column for the Lawrence Journal World and co-authors the Dear Dr. West series of books for teens and their parents. Wes, in Daisy's case, she attempted suicide several times. She turned to cutting herself. The second victim is still suffering from nightmares. What can help them get past something like this?
You've got to really do as early an intervention as you can. It's always a little odd to me when folks wait 2 or 3 months and then finally decide that the young person is damaged enough that now's a good time to go see the therapist. One wants to try and get ahead of the curve on that. And unfortunately,
go right away.
Absolutely. And my practice life seems to really have leaned in this direction. For quite a while, I hadn't seen near as many date rapes. and acquaintance assaults as I have been recently. And, you know, we did that show in January on this topic. And ever since then, this has just been a real common thing. I would have to be honest with you, Steve. I hate to say this, but I think it is probably the rare young woman who is in the nightlife in high school and college who has not had a similar encounter. This one's kind of extreme, but I would say most people I see, even if that's not the reason they're coming to see me, have had a very drunken sexual encounter that they are not consenting to or don't know if they consented.
You know, just a segue into our topic today, you know, teens and technology, the social media aspects of this case are intriguing, and you sort of wonder what might have happened here that would have screwed up the pursuit of a case by a prosecutor based on the kinds of things that were written on social media.
Well, I don't know this case, but I can speak generically, so everybody listening, understand that disclaimer. There are several things you can do in social media that are problematic. When I'm an expert witness, the person who hires me, I'm barely exaggerating to say they read every tweet I've ever sent out into space, mm-hmm. because that is fair game as an expert. It's also possible that people, because we're going to talk today about some of the problems in social media, one of which is immediacy, you think and you tweet about 1 second later. And it's very easy in a situation like this to put exculpatory information out that lets the offender off the hook. And that may be very minor, as minor as I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
And so that's one possibility. It's also possible that if one puts a lot of stuff out into space that doesn't reflect well on them, it impeaches them as a witness. So these are guesses on my part, coming from having done forensic work and watching out what I say.
Well, I want to thank KCUR's Monica Sandreski and Peggy Lowe for coming in and talking about their very good stories on what happened up in Maryville.